I guess, try to pick and choose a little bit as we go along what we'll say a little bit about, and we'll have to hope that we have the opportunity at other times to talk about some of these topics in greater length. But essentially, the Aliyah begins with Pasuk Chaf, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai al Rosh Shahar, Vayikra Hashem l'Moshe al Rosh Shahar, Vayal Moshe. So Hashem comes down to the mountain, to the top of the mountain, and he calls out to Moshe to come up to the top of the mountain, and indeed Moshe goes up. There's a comment here in the Znaim LaTorah of the Litzker Rav that we know that we have this idea, Chazal tell us that Har Sinai was picked not because it was the biggest mountain, but the opposite, it's a small mountain. And that's supposed to represent to us anivus and modesty, and the fact that Torah is only going to flourish in somebody who is modest. And if that's the case, so then why is it that here we're told Rosh Ahar, that this is taking place at the top of the mountain? So he suggests that that's meant to reflect the other side of the equation, that yes, it's true that a Talmud Chacham has to be modest and that Torah will only flourish in someone modest. But also the Gemara says in Masechta Sota that a Talmud Chacham has to have an eighth of an eighth of Gaiva. He has to have a little bit, a little token amount of pride, of Gaiva, and therefore this height of the mountain perhaps represents that. There's a similar statement in the Paras Yosef, he quotes from the Sefer Onig Nefesh, that that's why it was a mountain in the first place. We could say that if the idea really was that we want to have a theme of being low, of not being high, to represent modesty, so then why did we give the Torah a mountain? We should have found some Grand Canyon to go give it in, and that would be a better model. So there's a combination here that yes, we want to be modest, but we have to have a little bit of recognition of the stature of Torah, of how that elevates a person. So within our theme of modesty, we need to have a step up. So whether it is the fact that it's a mountain at all, or whether it's the previous point that it's the top of the mountain, but there is essentially that element, that counterbalancing element that is represented as well. So the Yom Rashem al Moshe, Reid Ho'ed Ba'am, Pen Yehersu, El Hashem Leros, V'nafel Men Urav, that we have to make sure to get the message to the people that they should be careful, protect the boundaries here, because we're worried they may break through, and who knows what could happen to many of them. V'gam HaKohanim HaNigash, Mil Hashem Yiskodoshu, Pen Yifrotz Bohem Hashem, and also the Kohanim who approach God, they should also sanctify themselves, otherwise maybe God will break out against them. But Yomer Moshe al Hashem lo yuchal ha'am la'alos al Har Sinai ki ata ha'idos ha'banu l'mor ha'gvel ha'sahar v'kidashto. So Moshe says to Hashem, people cannot come up to Har Sinai because you've told us to rope it off, to put boundaries. But Yomer Elav Hashem lech reid v'yaliso ata v'yaron imach. So God says, you should go down, and you should come up, you and Aaron together, but Kohanim and the people, don't let them break through to come up, because that might indeed happen. So Moshe came down to the people and said to them. Said to them what? So here's what we have. The Asaras HaDibros. So we know that we have a tradition that the first two Dibros were said directly by God, Bipi Agvura Nemru, and the rest of it was heard through Moshe. So the Radbaz has a tshuva where he says this is a little bit of a difficult concept to relate to, because if we're saying that the whole people heard the first two Dibros directly from God, that means they're basically equal to Moshe, right? Moshe spoke to God panim al panim. So what's the difference now between Moshe and them? So the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah actually sounds like they didn't hear these directly from God, but rather they saw directly the whole experience, the whole thunder and lightning show that they encountered directly, but the content was still passed to them through Moshe. But the problem is, if that's true, then what's different about these first two and the rest? So he assumes that indeed this was said to the Jews directly, the first two Dibros, but that doesn't make them like Moshe. Moshe had these kind of conversations every day, and for someone just to have that perspective once, at one given event in history, that's not the kind of thing that you have to concern yourself is going to be equating the people to Moshe. Okay, so the next pasuk continues. Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, the first Dibra, Asher Hitzisicha Meretz Mitzrayim, Mi Beis Avodim. That I am the God who has taken you out of Mitzrayim from the house of slaves. So the focus here on Yisias Mitzrayim, as opposed to, let's say, to Brias HaOlam, which you would think is really the Iker. So that's the discussion, why that is the focus. Ibn Ezra says it's because this shows a whole different level of God's involvement. That if God created the world, so then you could say, all right, he did that, but we could be deists. You know, that is the belief that, yes, God created the world. It's hard to deny that, but he no longer maintains any interest in what people do. He doesn't guide history at all. So that's what we want to counteract. We want to say, oh, of course he does. Not only did he create the world, but he also took us out of Mitzrayim. He also intervened in history, and therefore that's also a major part of what we believe. So, and a crucial part of what we believe. That requires even more emuna. So that takes the focus here. That's how the Ibn Ezra understands it. Others understand it to mean that it was just necessary to use that instead of Brias HaOlam because the people can't relate to Brias HaOlam. Like, none of them were present at Brias HaOlam, so to go that far back is not something that's going to have any meaning, while to talk about their recent past, to talk about what they can relate to, what they experienced as miraculous, so that's something that's going to have more benefit. Okay? Then we're told there should be no other gods. You're not allowed to have any other gods before me. Any other gods in front of me. So that constitutes its own concept. The Sefer Eish Tamar on Chumash points out that here this language of Lacha is also interesting because all of the Dibros are given over in singular language as if they're addressed to individuals. And yet, right before we start the Dibros, so the language of the Parsha is all plural, talking to many people. So how does it switch? Why does it switch to singular? So he emphasizes this idea that we know already from the previous Aliyah that the Jews were considered Ish Echad, Belev Echad, that in order for the Torah to get through to us, we have to be a unified entity. We have to take it all together. And therefore, our addresses is as a singular. We're addressed as people. And this idea of what the Gemara tells us in Masechet Sota, that the Torah begins and ends with Chesed, begins and ends with Derech Eretz, Kadma LaTorah, so he takes in that context also that the Torah simply is not going to be able to be effectively addressed to us if we don't have the sense of Achdus, if we're not taking care of each other, if we don't have a sense that we are, to use a term from this past week, we are a Raven Zebazen, so then we're not going to be able to have any access to Torah. Should just pause for a minute. They didn't really talk at all about the concept of the Yisrael Sadibro, so just say for a second, there is a big question as to what to understand is the nature of the Aseret HaDibros. In the English and in the movie, it's called the Ten Commandments. We don't call it the Ten Commandments. We call it the Aseret HaDibros, which already highlights the fact that there's something strange about calling it the Ten Commandments because we know that we have 613 commandments. So what's the idea of singling out 10? And in fact, by Benjamin Blech, so Lenin Gesundt has an article that was in the first volume of Mitoch HaOhel, which has the provocative title of Why There Are No 10 Commandments. Basically to say that it's not the proper translation of what's going on here, and that's not the theme. These don't represent just 10 mitzvos. And indeed, the question could be asked, well, what about the other 603? So the Ramban and others have a thesis here, which the Ramban wrote out. You can read in the Kol Kisvei Ramban, that the Asaras HaDibros are Klalim, which basically include the content of all 613 mitzvot. So in a way, this encapsulates the whole Torah. But the Gemara says that there is a fear of putting too much emphasis on the Asaras HaDibros, and that they wanted to read the Asaras HaDibros regularly in shul, and they didn't do that because Tarumas Taminin, because people say, oh, that's the only thing that is the Torah, and the rest is not from the Torah, the rest is not from God, and we don't have to pay attention to the rest. So based on that, the Rambam was opposed to the practice of standing up for Asaras HaDibros, which many of us have in our shuls. We do stand up. So Rav Soloveitchik discussed this in an article that was printed, I think, in the very first issue of the Masorah Journal, where he notes that we read the Asaras HaDibros with a different trup. So that sets it aside from the normal type of Kriya Satorah. So these concerns that we're singling it out and differentiating it from the rest of the Torah doesn't apply the way we do it. But there is a little bit of attention here, that there is a question as to what exactly the Asaras HaDibros is meant to represent. And what about the fact that the Gemara already displays this hesitancy to singling it out too much and to creating that kind of impression? Okay. So we're not allowed to make an apesel, lo sas, lo chafesel, lo chol tmuna, asher b'shamayim b'mal, asher b'aretz mitachas, asher b'mayim mitachas l'aretz. So we're not allowed to make engraved images or likenesses. And as we know from practice, this plays out in a lot of different ways. And the question of whether you can make a statue that's not idolatrous, whether it matters if the statue doesn't exactly represent, say, a human being accurately. What about even two-dimensional pictures of things like the stars and the sun and the moon, which are subject of idolatrous worship in some circles? So that is all a part of the discussion of what exactly is included in this prohibition. And then the pasuk continues with the prohibition of worship of Azar itself. Lo sishtacha v'lohem, v'lo sabdein, ki anochi Hashem elokecha el kana pokei avon avos abanim al shileishim v'al ribayim v'sonai. That if you're going to turn away from me, you're going to hate me, and you're going to worship other gods, so then I am jealous, so to speak. The word kina, by the way, has a different meaning than other types of words, and that the idea of kina represents the belief that somebody else has something which is yours, that type of jealousy. So therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses it, it has objective truth, because idolatry is the actual definition of that, of really taking something away from the only one who truly has it coming. And that's essentially what the word kina means when we use it to describe a human trait. It's a reference to this idea. But conversely, God says he does chesed and he pays back those who love him and those who treat him right. Lo sisa eshem Hashem elokecha lo shav, ki lo yinakeh Hashem eis asher yisa shmo lo shav. That you should not take God's name in vain, because one who does that, you're not going to find that your slate is ever cleaned off. Lo yinakeh. So some of the Sfarim ask, some of the Chassidish Sfarim have this idea, not sure if it has a deeper meaning to it, but they ask, if you have a concept of tshuva, so normally the assumption is that you can clean off the slate. So how come here, for this one Avera, it says, lo yinakeh, that it can't be cleaned off. So in some of the Sefer Chassidus, it says that when you do this Avera of taking God's name in vain, so it's written in the record, the permanent record up there in Shemayim, that's what you did, that you said God's name. So once that's there, so how are you going to erase that? That's going to have a bigger problem. So again, this is some more symbolic meaning behind this we have to figure out, but that's how some of the Sfarim suggest that's what this lo yinakeh is coming to highlight. There is a big machlokas how this refers to, let's say, making a bracha l'batala. So if you make a bracha l'batala, you say a bracha that's not warranted, So the Gemara says that that's a violation of Losisa Shem Hashem Lokecha L'Sham. Sounds like it's a violation of this Torah prohibition of not saying God's name in vain. However, that was actually a big machlokas Rishonim. The Rambam sounds like that. But Tosfos and Masechus Rosh Hashanah, the Talmud Gimel, and a number of others, they assume that this Gemara is actually an asmachta, that it's not really a violation of this Isser to make a bracha of batal. Because, as Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach explains in a tshuva, that Chazal tell us to make 100 brachas a day. So are you going to maintain that Chazal suspended the Isser Daraisa 100 times a day? It's a little hard to believe. It could be okay, once in a while Chazal are allowed to override Torah law, but 100 times a day, that's hard to believe. And what's more logical, he assumes, is that if you are praising God, the Surah Sadracha, even if it doesn't happen to be a Chiyuv right now, but you are saying a statement of praise to God, so that's probably not what we're talking about. That probably is not a Torah violation. You're taking God's name for the purpose of praising Him. It's not a violation of this. So presumably, the Isser of Bracha Vatala is really an Isser of the Rabbanan, and not this Isser of this Pasuk. And then essentially, when Chazal instituted the whole concept of Brachos, so to correlate to that, they also made the concept of bracha l'batala as a nisah d'rabbanan, that is a chiyuv d'rabbanan to make brachas when you're supposed to, and there's an nisah d'rabbanan to make one when you're not supposed to, but it's not the yisur d'araisa of shem v'shem l'kach l'shav. There's also a machlokes, that we have a prohibition called lifnei iver, that we're not allowed to cause others to sin. So there was a discussion. What happens if you have a din Torah with somebody? Let's say you're in a litigation with somebody, so you are right and they are wrong, and you need to take them to Beis Din. But you know that if you take them to Beis Din, so the Beis Din is going to ask for a shvua, and your opponent will take a shvua, and he'll be lying. He's going to take God's name really in vain. He's going to take God's name in a false oath. So are you allowed to do this? Why don't we say that it's lifnei iver, you're putting someone in a position where they're going to transgress. So that was the view of the Orach Chaim, who's come there to Chumash. And the Rabbaz has a tshuva where he says that's not your problem, that you have to assume that you have the right to pursue justice, and that the fact that somebody who's an opponent to you is going to do an avera in his defense, that's not your problem, it's not something that we can hold you liable to avoid. Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg in his Sefer Mishmeres Chaim, I think, has a little bit of a discussion of why, from a technical perspective, this Rabbaz, why he wouldn't violate the Hebrew Lusin Tengoshul. Okay, so then we have Pesukim that we're all familiar with, and here we really have to do some triage to decide just how much we'll speak about these. But here, the Pasuk is offered some Moshavas Lakadcho, so there is quite a lot to say about that. So we'll just mention some very brief outline. That Zachar Shem Shabbos Lekadsho is a mitzvah, and it is a unique hekesh. It's a one-of-a-kind hekesh. That there is a concept of a hekesh, that when you have two different things that are mentioned in Psukim that are near each other, sometimes it's one of the midosh Torah Midrashas Behem, that you can learn out one from the other and assume there are related concepts. So here is a hekesh of a whole different kind. But there's a hekesh of Zachar that we find here, and Shamor, which is not the next pasuk, or even the next parsha, or the next sefer, but you have to go all the way to Beis Hanan to find it. So it's not a hekesh in the classical sense, it's a unique kind of hekesh, but the Gemara calls it one in Maseches Brachos and Daf Chaf, and it's based on the idea that, excuse me, Zachar v'Shamor, Dibor Echa Nemru, Masha Ein Ha Ozen Yochel Shmo, Masha Ein Ha Yochel Daber, and that us humans, we're not able to say two things at once or to hear two things at once, but that's what happened at Sinai, so therefore there's a hekesh between Zachar and Shamar. So what does that mean? So first of all, what does Zachar mean? So we relate to Zechiras HaShabbos as the mitzvah of Kiddush. We say there's a mitzvah of Daraisa to make Kiddush, and Zachar is the source of that mitzvah. So that is generally the way we understand it, but there's a lot of nuance and complexity there, because Kiddush nowadays involves Friday night, that we, well, it's the whole package, that Friday night we recite Kiddush on wine in the place in which we are eating, Makom Suda, and then we do it again the next morning, we call Kedusha Rabba. So how much of that is Min HaTorah? So there are many, many different views. In the Sefer Yunim B'Halacha, he lists 15 different interpretations in Rishonim of what Zachar Shema Shabbos includes. And among the disputed points is, does it include wine? Probably according to most Rishonim, it does not include wine. Tosfos has an in-between view that includes a cup of wine, but to make a bracha on the wine, that's not included in Zachar Shema Shabbos, the Kadosh. What about Makom Suda? Is that included? Probably not. But some assume that that's the Machlokas Rishonim. What about Havdalah? The view of the Rambam is that Havdalah is included in Zachar Shema Shabbos Lakadsho. Remember it on the way in. Remember it on the way out. Does it involve Yetzias Mitzrayim or not? These are many, many different views. So essentially we assume that Kiddush is Daraisa. Does it have to have a bracha? Is it enough just to mention Kedusha Shabbos, to mention Shabbos by itself? There again, perhaps as many as 15 different views how to understand what exactly this pasuk includes, even though nowadays we essentially have a consensus that it includes Kiddush, but what part of Kiddush is included? Are you Yotzei Kiddush Min HaTorah when you go to shul? A lot of that hinges on this, and again, there's a lot to discuss that'll be a little bit beyond the possibility of any kind of a time frame if we include too much. But there also are other aspects of Zachar Shema Shabbos Lakadosho. The idea that, for example, during the week when you go shopping and you see something that is good for using on Shabbos, so you will buy that. That will also be an act of Zachar Shabbos that happens during the week. Or the fact that we say every day Shir Shal Yom, and we say Yom Yom Sheni Shal Shabbos, etc., etc. So all of that is, as the Ramban points out, is also a mitzvah of Zachar Shema Shabbos Lakadosho. So relevant to what we said before, it also might be the case that the idea of, let's say, not taking a trip too close to Shabbos or the like, of doing things that maybe will put us in a position where we'll have to be Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh reasons, that maybe that's also included in this idea that we should remember Shabbos even during the week, that we should take steps to protect Shabbos. So, with that understanding that Zachar Shema Shabbos Lakadosho means all these things, and also includes Kiddush, so what's the significance of Zachar V'Shamer V'Dibor Echad Nemru? So, Al Pi Halacha, the Gemara says the significance is that this comes to obligate women, that women are obligated in Kiddush already, or we're obligated in Kiddush. And how do we know they're obligated in Kiddush? You would say that they shouldn't be obligated in Kiddush, because Kiddush should be a Mitzvah Saseh Shehazman Grama. So a little bit of a preview, we're going to be on those sugyas soon, the Mitzvah Saseh Shehazman Grama sugyas. But one would think that Kiddush should clearly fall into those parameters, that it is a positive mitzvah, and it is time-dependent. So why are women obligated? Because there is a hekesh, because there's a connection between Zachar and Shamar. So what does Shamar represent? So we generally understand that Shamar represents the malachos, represents abstaining from work on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Kol sheyeshno b'shmira, yeshno b'schira, that whoever is subject to the prohibition of doing malach on Shabbos is also subject to the obligation of zechiras haShabbos. So since women are not allowed to do malach on Shabbos, they are yeshno b'shmira, so therefore yeshno b'schira, they also have this notion that they are prohibited, they're obligated to say Kiddush. So there is a other machlokas, which I guess a little synergy between Shishi of this week's parsha and Shishi of last week's parsha. So there is a machlokas. What about Shal Shudas? Are women obligated in Suda Shabbos, the three Sudas of Shabbos? So this is a machlokas, Rabbeinu Tam and the Ran. And it's an interesting machlokas because the question of whether they're obligated, so you have two views here. The two views are yes and yes. Both Rabbeinu Tam and the Ran think women are obligated in Shabbos Shudas. The only question is, what's the reason? So Rabbeinu Tam says the reason is Afein Hayuv Oso Hanes, that because last week Shishi, the man, was the basis for Suda Shabbos, so since that Nes included women as well, so just like they have to hear the Megillah and they have to light Hanukkah candles, so too they have to eat Sudos on Shabbos. And the Ran has what seems like a better reason. The Ran says, no, it's a Gemara. The Gemara says, Kol Sheyeshna B'Shmira, Yeshna B'Skira. So therefore you have to assume that Shmira is the Melachos, and Zechira is the positive aspect of Shabbos, all of it, Kiddush and Shalosh Shudas, and whatever else comes along with the positives of Shabbos. So what the Gemara means by this drasha is to say that it's a package deal, to say that if you're obligated in observing Shabbos, you're also obligated in all the mitzvahs aseh, all the positive components, so therefore that includes the Suda of Shabbos as well. So why does Rabbeinu Tam disagree? That seems like it's a pretty reasonable thing to say. So apparently, Rabbeinu Tam assumes that the drasha of Kol Sheyeshna B'Shmira Yeshna B'Schira is not talking about everything in Shabbos, it's only talking about Kiddush. It only comes to tell us that women are obligated in Kiddush, but doesn't include anything beyond Kiddush. So that's interesting, because the Ran seems to make a little more sense, right? To say that Shabbos is a package deal, okay, that much we could understand. But to say that only Kiddush is singled out as connected to the Melachos, that's a little harder to understand. So Rav Soloveitchik had a Hesber, which Rav Schechter expanded on. I'm not 100% sure where one starts and the other one ends. But the suggestion was that maybe Kiddush is uniquely connected to the Melachos, because the whole function of Kiddush, the reason that we have this mitzvah of Zohar Shema Shabbos Lekadsho, is to serve a purpose related to the Melachos. And the Rambam writes in Mishnah Torah that Muksa was created, the whole notion that Chazal gave us this prohibition of moving certain things on Shabbos was because of a number of reasons. He gives three different reasons, and one of the reasons he gives is that we need to have a shvisa hanikaris, that we're worried that there are people who won't do malach on Shabbos, not because of any holy reason, but they don't do malach on Shabbos because they're lazy, they don't have anything to do, so they don't do malach any day of the week, and they're not going to do malach on Shabbos either. Rav Soloveitchik once gave an interview to the commentator where he talked about his history in America, and he said that when he first came to Boston, there were very few people who didn't work on Shabbos, and among the people who didn't work on Shabbos, many of those people were octogenarians. They didn't work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday either. So if you don't know what that word means, you might think, okay, this is another religion where they have Shabbos every day of the week. But what he meant was people who were in their 80s, so they were retired, so it's if they didn't work on Shabbos because they didn't work at all. So that's what the Rambam describes, that maybe somebody will take off Shabbos, but it's not going to have any religious significance. So therefore, you have to have a shvisa hanikaris. We have to do something to show that it is active and purposeful. So therefore, Chazal instituted muksa, for example, because muksa looks strange. The idea that you'll avoid moving things in a certain way. And that will call our attention to the idea that it's not coincidental, but rather that there is an intentional avoidance of malacha on this day. So the suggestion here is that maybe that's why there's a particular link between Kiddush and the malachos, and not that Shabbos as a whole is a package deal, but that when it comes to Kiddush, Kiddush is there to advertise that the malachos are intentional. The fact that you're not doing malachos is not because you're lazy or you have nothing to do, but you'll be abstaining from malachos this coming 24 hours for intentional reasons. And therefore, that could explain the Rambam's shita, that even though the Rambam might not even believe in the concept of Tosefta Shabbos, that's a debated point. The idea that we start Shabbos early It's not clear if the Rambam agrees with that or not. But it's a problem if there's no Tosefta Shabbos, because the Gemara says explicitly that you can make Kiddush while it's still light outside. So if there's no Tosefta Shabbos, how can you make Kiddush right? So for the Rambam, we can understand, because the Rambam actually maintains that Kiddush does not have to be made on Shabbos itself. Kiddush just is recited close to the beginning of Shabbos, maybe soon after it starts, maybe soon before it starts. And it's there to make an announcement that the abstaining from malacha, that is intentional. Okay, let's see how much farther we can go. Sheishim tavo v'yasisukom malachtecha, so Jedidiah, this is also sometimes quoted as a source for an obligation during the week, that's also a part of the pasuk. You have to work 6 days. And then all your malacha should be done during that time. The idea, the emphasis that you will do your malacha, so on the one hand, that's contrasted with Shabbos when you're not doing your malacha, and like I just said, maybe you could use it as a positive focus to say not just that you should rest on Shabbos, but you should be doing your malacha the other 6 days. But Rashi also has a comment here that the idea of mentioning the malacha in this context is to tell us that Kishatovo, reading from Rashi, Kishatovo, Shabbos, Yehei Be'necha, Kilu Kol Malachta Asuya, Shlota Harach Malacha. That you shouldn't be thinking about your malacha on Shabbos, so therefore when Shabbos comes, you should have the mindset that you have done all the malacha that you need to do, that everything has been taken care of. So this is the idea, really, of Oneg Shabbos, and it's one of the notions that we just focus only on things beyond our malacha, outside of our malacha. And as Rebecca Kamenetsky writes in the Sefer Nechumash, that this is possibly the mucker for the idea that we're not Mavakesh Rachamim on Shabbos, and that therefore it's really more of a Shabbos idea than a Yantif idea, that we're not supposed to be thinking of anything outside our non-Malacha lives on Shabbos, and that's a message of this pasuk as well. The next pasuk says, Yom HaShvi, Shabbos, L'Hashem Elokecha, L'Isasa, Chol Malacha, Ata Vincha Bitecha, Avdecha Vamasecha, Behemtecha, V'Gercha, Asher V'Sharecha. So what does that mean, the Ger? Where does the Ger come in? Why does the Torah have to emphasize the Ger? So it's a question. Some understand, sounds like from Chazal, that it just means the Ger in the normal sense, so it's not clear why there's a need to mention this. The person converts to Judaism, so then of course they have to keep Shabbos, so what exactly is the reference here? So others understand it differently. The Ramban writes that it's a reference to a Ger Toshav, and that the Ger Toshav is not supposed to do malacha on behalf of the Yisrael, and that's what it means. While the Ibn Ezra has a different understanding, he thinks that the Ger Toshav is not allowed to do malacha at all, even for himself. And that the reason is because, as the Gemara suggests in some places, that the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, that is a minimal requirement for a Ger Toshav, for somebody who's going to live in the land of Israel. And perhaps it's not just the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, but maybe it's even an expanded perspective of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and therefore that should include Shabbos, because if Avodah Zarah is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, so belief in God who created the world, that's also crucial, and if denying Shabbos is like denying the Creator, so then maybe that has something in common with Avodah Zarah, and that's the whole discussion, how exactly that should apply to a Ger Toshav. Rebecca Kamenetsky also mentions the possibility, and he has a whole long essay about this in Sefer Chumash, that maybe it's a reference to the Gerim at that time, and these Gerim were not really sincere Gerim, they were just those who kind of latched on to Klal Yisrael, and therefore there could have been a Havamina that they shouldn't be keeping Shabbos, and that's why the Pasuk tells us that. Alright, we should read the rest of the Dibros, but we just are not going to have time to go into full detail on everything. It's literally the entire Torah possibly contained in this Aliyah, so we'll just at least call attention to it. So the Pasuk continues, Kisheishis Yamim, Asa Hashem, Asa Shemayim, Yas Aret, Es Hayom, Yas Kol Hashem Bam, Vayonach, Vayom HaShvi, Akeim Berech, Hashem, Asim HaShabbos, Vayikadishayu, we're all familiar from Kiddush. And then, Kaberis Avicha V'yasimacha, L'man Yarichon Yamecha, Al HaAdama, Asher Hashem Elokecha, Nosei Moch. So that we will not expand on, because hopefully we'll be able to expand on that in Jir, so we'll have time this year to learn a lot more about Kabbalah Sivicha V'Yasimecha, but just you're familiar with the idea that it's supposed to bridge the first Luchos and the second Luchos, and that the first Luchos are mitzvot ben Adam l'makom, the second Luchos are mitzvot ben Adam l'chavero, and Kabbalah Sivicha V'Yasimecha is kind of both. It's about gratitude to our parents for raising us, and it's also about the recognition that we're trying to honor God through those who are closest to Him. So since our parents are partners with God in creation, so at least since we can't really perceive God in our daily lives, so we direct our attention towards our parents, and that's supposed to be a focus. And then we have all of the famous Los essays, Los Ritzach, shouldn't murder people. It's a big discussion on how to translate that. Should that be translated as don't kill? Or maybe don't murder. That don't murder presumably is a stronger term that excludes killing people in self-defense or killing people who are guilty and the like. And that's a major debate, as always. And they argue that the death penalty is against the Ten Commandments. So that's not necessarily true. Los sinof, you should not commit adultery. Los signov, you shouldn't steal. But Chazal, the Machlok is about this also. This may be a reference not to stealing, but rather begonev nefashos, sarkasu medaber, that a reference to not stealing people, which is one of the major sources to buttress a point from 2 weeks ago, that the Torah does not allow us to go make slaves. To whatever extent avadim exists as a concept, the idea that, like we found in America 200 years ago, that people were kidnapped from other continents and brought here, so that would be prohibited. That would be a violation of the Gnevus Nefashos. Lo sana b'rachei shaker, shouldn't bear false witness. Lo sachmor beis reyacha, lo sachmor eishus reyacha, v'avado v'yamaso v'sharo v'chamaro v'chal asher l'reyacha. So this is a big machlokas, what exactly is included in lo sachmor. Now part of the problem is that some of the Rishonim have a view that the Torah doesn't have prohibitions or mitzvos that are just mental, that are just things that take place in the mind. So therefore the assumption is that if we're told do not covet, lo sachmor, it has to be that there's some action involved, and at least as a corollary, and that that's a necessary part here. Now this is especially complicated because there also is an issur of osis aveh, they're not allowed to have a taiva for people's things, so that does seem to at least be emotionally related. This is a whole discussion how to address that. But there is a machlokas rishonim, what's involved in lo sachmor, that the Rambam says that basically you pressure someone and you drive them crazy until they sell an item to you that they wouldn't want to sell, and that's the Avera, and the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid basically says the Avera is taking somebody's property, Shalom Kedin. But in the Rambam scenario, you end up paying for it, and his assumption is that once you pay for it in the end, so therefore ultimately it should be a legit sale, even if you pressure the person to go through with it. But the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, has this language also, that if you chepper the guy, you drive him nuts until he sells it, so that should be a violation of Lo Sachmor. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that the whole mentality that there's something that you want, so you'll make sure that you're not going to let it go until you have it, and whatever you're going to have to do to get the other person to give it to you, that is a violation of what the Torah is getting at with Lo Sachmor. So it's a big discussion how it applies to things like gifts. If you pressure somebody to give you a gift, that's where some, I guess, opposite synergy. That yesterday we read about the Adam Chashuv, how the Adam Chashuv gives people hana by receiving gifts. So you find that same phrase here in Rabbeinu Yonah and the Kajik Lavarev and others who talk about whether there's lo sachmor by gifts. If you ask somebody to give you a gift, so there the same language of an Adam Chashuv is invoked as a negative. That the idea is that if you're somebody who's too intimidating, people have a hard time saying no to you. So then if you ask them to give you a gift, they're going to feel pressure to do it, and maybe we should say there is lo sachmor because of that. So that's a big discussion, what exactly lo sachmor applies to and doesn't apply. And the Nitziv has a comment that here, when the Torah talks about Eishes Reyecha, so there,
the idea is that somebody is going to interfere with a person's marriage until eventually they separate and you can take the wife. So that's what the Torah is saying by Lo Sachmot. And it says that including all these together is a way of saying that you look at that example and you see that Lo Sachmot basically refers to something that you want that is not available, that is not on the market. And you're going to do whatever you need to in order to get it out there, in order to make it available to you. That's this violation of Lo Sachmot. Ibn Ezra has a famous comment here, which doesn't really help the issue of whether it's a mitzvah with an action or not. But that point aside, it is an extremely insightful and important comment of Ibn Ezra. And he says that this is essentially an emotion. Let's say, Lo Sachmot Eishes Re'acha, you're not supposed to want your friend's wife. So how exactly are you supposed to control your inner feeling about it? How exactly are you supposed to address that? And he gives this mashal, where he says that let's say there is a farmer, and the farmer decides that he's in love with the princess of the country, so he's going to try to marry her. So maybe in America that could happen, but in the days of Ibn Ezra in Europe that wasn't possible. The society was too rigidly defined. So this farmer is not going to spend his life trying to figure out how he can arrange to meet this princess and marry her. He recognizes that it's simply not something that's within the realm of possibility, and he doesn't anguish himself about it because it's just not something that even makes sense. So, therefore, says Ibn Ezra, that's the mentality here also, that when it's Eishes Re'echa, when it's somebody who is married to another person, so then the Torah is telling you, don't even think about it, don't even allow it to be something that for a minute you think is a possibility, that you have this glimmer of, who knows, maybe I can pull it off. Once you have that way of thinking, that's a very, very dangerous path to go down, and therefore the Torah doesn't just say Lo Sinaf, like you said a little while ago, but also says Lo Sachmot, don't even allow your mentality to accommodate the possibility that this could happen, and if that's indeed your attitude, that it's impossible, then probably it will be impossible, and you're not going to put yourself in a position to try to bring it about. Okay, so we have to covet more time because there's just too much to talk about, and the Zohar says that when it comes to Torah, you're allowed to be jealous of other people's Torah, you're allowed to want it. That's interesting as a heter, because it's one thing to say we understand, and this is actually Daf Yomi this week also, just a little synergy. The Gemara says that when it comes to competition in Talmud Torah, is to open up another yeshiva, so you're allowed to do that even when we try to protect people from competition, because we say kina sofrim tarba chachma, that kina, that one Talmud Chacham feels for another, is a positive force because it results in more Talmud Torah happening. So along those lines, the synergy to the parsha, so there is a statement that there is no Lo Sachmot when it comes to someone's Torah. So that, on the one hand, you can understand, okay, so this is a Dvar Mitzvah, and this is the kind of creative energy that we want to fuel, but the problem with that whole drasha is it sounds like were it not for a mitzvah, then there would be Lo Sachmot. And that's hard to understand, because normally you would assume that the whole gather of Lo Sachmot is that you have something and I don't want to take it from you, I want to deprive you of it, something along the lines of Gezel and Geneva. But if you have something, and I say, oh, that's great, what do you have? I'm going to go out and buy one of my own. So basically, I desire it, so I'm going to now obtain it, but I'm not going to take it away from you. I'm going to obtain my own version of it. So it's hard to see what the issue is there. Why would that even be a problem of Lo Sachmot? So when it comes to this Torah example, it sounds like that's what we're talking about. You're not going to take away someone else's Torah. It means that you see somebody else is very accomplished in learning, so then you feel motivated to accomplish in learning. So if you're going to parallel that to a physical item, it's not like you're trying to take away that physical item, it's that you feel inspired to obtain it from somewhere else on your own. So it's hard to believe that that should be considered Lo Sachmot. But some discuss that based on this comparison. So in any event, we do indeed covet more learning and more time for learning. And what can we do? We have limited lifetimes and limited schedules. But God willing, maybe we'll find opportunities to revisit some of these things, particularly keep it on the end, as we said. And again, the schedule for Sunday, so I think Sunday we'll have a normal shiur time with some perm topics and some surprise synergy. And I mentioned also, I'm giving Kol Yom Rishon on Sunday. Before that, I don't know yet whether it's the 9:30 or the 10:30 slot, but one of those slots is in Kol Yom Rishon, so if you'd like to join us for that, you're invited to that as well. It takes place just one floor away from our makam on the base mattress. Okay, with that, we will daven mincha, and I believe it's Jacob who's looking to lead us in Binyamin Yechiel daven. Okay. Ashrei Shem Yisrael, Yisrael Yisrael, Shreyam Shekafa, Shreyam Shekafa, Shreyam Shekafa, Shreyam Shekafa, Shreyam Shekafa, Ach, man, no, I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that.